Welcome to Decoding Sales, a podcast where an engineer, that's me, Alex, and a salesperson,
that's me, Peter,
talk about the art and science of sales as it relates to life and business. In this episode, we're going to talk about how to handle a sales process that isn't working. Have you ever been in a situation where you're either wondering, is it the product? Is it the sales leader? Is it the sales process? Or just getting stuck? You're not, your team, your organization is not hitting the number. How do you know what's wrong? And most importantly, what to do to fix it? In this episode, Peter's going to pull back the curtains on how he helps his team and others actually navigate these thorny questions so they can get from sales failures and being red on the numbers to hitting and exceeding quota regularly. So Peter, just to start off, when people come to you and ask, my sales process, something's wrong, where do you start?
The first thing I start with is to figure out who the buyer is and what is the feedback that you're getting, even qualitatively, on your product. Because to get to a number, you have a lot of feedback that you've gotten, presumably from research as well as early customer conversations. So that's the first thing I ask. Do you have the right buyer? And is the buyer saying that there's an obvious pain point that your product could solve? Even without the numbers, are people saying you're solving a problem for them?
And what are you looking for there? What's the difference between lukewarm and polite versus real problem?
Yeah, I think the difference is real problem is pretty obvious. I don't think I need to review that for our founders. We're all fairly intelligent folks, and there's a lot of problems out there. I think the answer of, hey, you're doing this in a very unique way, or I haven't seen this done in X, Y, and Z manner, I think that's what I'm looking for. Because that gives an indication that even if it is a competitive space, let's say, even if it is a pain point that's universal, that there's something that your company does that makes it a unique approach, that makes it something that somebody is willing to siphon off budget for.
I like that. So you're looking for some kind of differentiation in the mind of the buyer that would make this product interesting or stand out.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that's hard to fake. Nobody's going to tell you, hey, this is a really unique approach when there's, you know, validated platforms or products out there that tackle the same problem. And most of the times too, a lot of founders, I'm sure listening, they're not tackling a problem that's unique, right? Or that hasn't been tackled before. So what I look for is, what is the uniqueness in the approach and the solution, not necessarily the problem.
If you get these like lukewarm responses, that probably means you have to go back to the drawing board or start thinking hard about your product. But what I think I'm really curious about is what happens if you're actually seeing these positive reactions from the buyer, but the sales process still isn't working?
At that point, I look at a few different indicators. The first is, what is the segment of company you're reaching out to show results? As an example, if there's a problem that you're solving, but it's a complex problem and the approach is very unique and something that is sellable, I might not necessarily start at a company that's 100,000 employees because the sales process is probably going to take 9 to 12 months there, unless it's an extremely burning, urgent need. And so the sales process not working in that context doesn't mean that you're not closing a deal within the first 3 months. You're going to have a little bit more of a runway to understand if the sales process works, because by nature of enterprise sales cycles, these are going to take longer. That's the first thing I look at. The second thing I look at is similarly industry. If there's a universal problem and you start to sell to government agencies, as an extreme example, that might be tough because federal agencies are really hard to sell into because of all the bureaucracy and the process involved. So those are two things I look at. And then the last thing I look at is the buyer persona. So for a lot of products, you might think that who buys your product is obvious, but oftentimes you need to do a little bit more research. For TwinGate, for example, you know, we have buyers from security, DevOps, IT. They're three distinct buckets usually in companies. If we were to say, hey, this is only something security is going to buy, we might be in a different position where maybe our sales process might not accelerate as quickly as we'd like it to. But we understand that advocates can come from different departments. And so I think that's helped us gain momentum faster because we're open to working with different folks who are solving the same problem. So broadly, those are some of the buckets you should start thinking about to start proving out whether or not your sales process is working.
Let me tease that out a little bit more. So For Segment, you're really looking at, are you going too big too soon? Should you scale down the size of the companies you're going after?
That's right. Yep.
And for Industry, kind of the same concept. Are you starting with an industry that is ripe for accepting your product, or one where it's going to be more of the like late majority or laggard on the adoption scale?
Yep, and, that's right.
And then for the buyer persona, can you unpack that a little bit more? Are you looking to make sure you have the right buyer personas, or that you have the ones that are going to be champions, or that you have a multiple buyer personas? Help me understand that.
Yeah, I think it's everything you just mentioned. For example, let's say I'm selling a sales operations platform. You might think the obvious direction to go is to go after sales operations leaders. But in a lot of companies, the CEO might actually feel the pain point more than the sales ops leader, depending on what your product is selling. And same thing for any product that's in a specific vertical. You might be selling a, you know, an accounting platform, let's say. You might think, okay, I need to go after all the CFOs. But again, like the pain point might not be at that level only. It might be at the level of the business constituents within the company, the CEO, the COO, right? So I think kind of looking at your messaging and where it resonates the most is going to be important, and to not shut off a specific buyer persona, even if it seems obvious to go after a specific buyer. I think that's a big part of it.
I see. So you're kind of saying like a purchase in an organization has many parents, and you need to understand who those parents are and get them all coming together to agree to buy your product. You can't just assume it's going to be the one person who from the outside, it seems most obvious.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a better way to look at it. There's a lot of consensus-driven buying motion. So even if your product solves a pain point within a specific department, you still do need to get buy-in and figure that into your sales process across multiple departments. The other thing too is, you know, those are kind of sales approaches. There's also, I think, sales and product are so intermingled. So you can also look at where within the buying cycle is your product being introduced. So I'll give you an example. In some companies, a self-serve flow works where you just sign up on your own, you don't talk to anybody, and the product just works out of the gate. And you have some light bulb moments within a trial period, and then you upgrade. For other services, that might not be the right approach, because maybe your product isn't quite there to be self-serve yet, even though long-term you want it to get there. So then in that case, you might want to say, hey, I'm going to put a white paper download, and then I'm going to manually gate the product and force people to talk to me before they actually try the product, because I actually need to level set the vision and I need to be able to walk them through which parts of the product they need to see first for it to be a slam dunk deal. So I think there's also that people can look into, founders can look into. There's so much talk about like product-led growth. And I think product-led growth is great, but you know, at a certain point, product-led growth is great if your sign-up flow and onboarding flow are seamless. If it's not seamless, you might want to go slow to go fast and have a little bit more manual intervention and some wins on the board before you're like, hey, I'm going to cut this product loose and have people figure it out without talking to anybody.
Do you want to just define product-led growth for our audience in case some folks aren't familiar?
What product-led growth means is that the product is selling itself. The product in terms of interaction, onboarding, engagement is so obviously fitting a need that you don't necessarily need to talk to a salesperson to explain what your product does. And so it's really that product purity that's driving the growth. Now, and most product-led growths are still big sales teams because you still need to negotiate. You need to figure out the commercial structure of how you're going to introduce the tool. But I think the discovery and the aha moments of finding value out of a product in a product-led growth company comes out of engaging with the product, not engaging with people.
Got it. So you're saying another way that an organization can get stuck is thinking they're ready for product-led growth when they're not.
Exactly. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Talking to sales or go-to-market and building product-led growth, they can coexist, even if you ultimately want your company to be a product-led growth company. And I think especially in the early days, it behooves founders to really put in the manual work to get to more of that product-led growth story.
It's almost like when you sort of talk about the startup where instead of building the software in the back end, the founder is running the deliveries. I think there was some story about like DoorDash, Tony would just do the deliveries on the back end without any software, without anyone else. So he really understood that flow. Sounds like you're sort of saying like the same thing. Like if you're trying to do product-led growth, you know, actually start with the sales cycle like that and then think about which parts you can replace once you really understand the ins and outs of that go-to-market.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And for us, you know, we have a great product that is almost self-serve, but we still put in manual intervention in the beginning of the discovery of our platform because the product's not quite there where no explanation can sell the product, right? There still is this concept that we're trying to educate folks on that's slightly different than traditional VPN that requires somebody to speak with the stakeholder or champion or decision maker.
What's coming to mind for me here is a little bit of the concept of category creation. If you're creating a product that's kind of trying to carve out a new category, your product-led growth is going to be more difficult because you really have to educate the market on this new sort of need and concept. And so it sounds like you'd almost have to start with the sales process and then focus more and try to shift over time to product-led growth as a result of that. Does that make sense? I'm kind of curious for your thoughts on this, actually.
Yeah, I do think it makes sense. And as you were speaking, I actually thought of something else because the episode is about what happens if your sales process isn't working. I think the other main component of this that we're dancing around is that you have to make the sales process more cross-functional pretty quickly. Because oftentimes I think founders who come to me who said the sales process isn't working haven't really been involved with the sales process. And they just say, hey, my sales leader is not producing results. I don't know why. So the answer to that is not ask, hey, what's wrong with the sales process? It's to ask, you know, who else needs to be part of the sales process to figure out what needs to be fixed? Because oftentimes it's not just sales that needs to be fixed. It's multiple aspects of the business, right? It's like, are we messaging to the right folks? Is the product gating the product at the right time? Are we introducing the product at the right time? Once people get into the product, what is the feedback that is being given? What are some improvements we can make there, right? So I think that's also a big part of this is to get to those answers that you're asking and to ask those questions around when do we actually educate? When do we actually go full force and just, you know, throw this out into the wild? Those are only things that a team can answer, not just a sales team.
It really brings home that old Andy Grove quote, snow melts first at the periphery. Your sales team is going to be the ones finding out about all the problems with your product. So if sales isn't working, you're going to learn a lot about the core heartbeat of your business. What you're saying here, I think, is you can't really delegate that to your sales leader, both because they can't be empowered to run the whole business. It's like, if you're the founder, that's your job. And I guess also because it requires more skills than one person is going to be able to bring to the table in any given context.
Exactly. And I think a lot of founders, unfortunately, don't think about it that way. Because they need a reason to be like, okay, the sales process isn't working. And usually the reason is, okay, the person running the sales process isn't doing this correctly. Also, like there's a lot of folks that get defensive. They're like, what do you mean? There's nothing wrong with my product. People love it. Like I've showed this demo multiple times and they said they love it. And you know, even the best of products, you still need to unpack the onboarding flow. You need to unpack the discovery. Because imagine all the amazing products that you use today. There's times when if you were introduced to the product, you might not resonate with it. That podcast mic that you have right now, you researched and you found some reviews and then you bought it. Imagine if there was a door-to-door salesperson who came to you and was like, hey, Alex, I need you to buy this podcast mic right now. You probably wouldn't have bought it because that probably wouldn't have been the right time for you to make a purchasing decision. So you get the point there. There's like marketing discovery. There's an onboarding flow that this company is probably optimizing for, namely like you discovering reviews to get to a purchase. And it's the same thing with tech sales. A team has to figure out, okay, when do I want to sell Alex Twingate? Most of the time, it's not going to be the salesperson reaching you cold. That is still an important engine for us. But there's a lot of other steps, product-led, marketing-led, sales-led, that have to come together for the sales process to work, quote-unquote, right?
Well, you know, the only thing I buy door-to-door these days is steak knives. I have like 7 sets. I feel really happy every time I get one.
Or like Girl Scout cookies, right?
I've never had a Girl Scout come to my door trying to sell me Girl Scout cookies. As far as I can tell, the only way that anyone ever sells Girl Scout cookies is to like other their coworkers. So Peter, this is super interesting, right? Because we're getting into overlap between does your product have product market fit? If so, which segments of the market, what scale of company size, which types of companies? And a lot of that then involves really telling the founder or CEO, like, yeah, and it's that end of the day, that is your job, not just the salesperson's job. A lot of sales leaders get fired because the company is not doing well.
Yep.
And I'm sure some of them are being fired for bad reasons, and some of them probably are being fired for good reasons. So how do you know when you have the wrong sales leader?
Or
how do you know they're doing really well, but you're still not hitting the number?
Yeah, definitely. It's not all just like deflecting blame off to other cross-functional teams, right? Because definitely sales leaders are held accountable, and they should be. And so I think to answer your question, how do you know a sales leader is not working out? First, go back to the basics. You know, is your sales leader actually talking to customers more often than not, you know, in the early stage, especially, right? If this person is actually like looking at spreadsheets, strategizing and being like, hey, this is our 5-year vision, probably not the right thing to be thinking about if you're an early stage seed Series A company. Because the product is changing so rapidly and the market dynamics are probably changing so rapidly that your sales leader, your revenue leader has to be telling you what's going on there. So that's the first thing. Like, are there calls being logged? And if that sales leader is hiring a team, is that team talking to customers regularly, you know, every single day, multiple times a day? So that's the first thing, just top of funnel, is there activity?
And where is their time going?
It seems obvious, but a lot of sales leaders somehow miss this, especially for ones that have been not selling recently. It's hard to go back to being an AE, an account executive. And a sales leader at early stage companies, we have to be sellers too. If we're not holding our own quota, the business isn't going to do well. Because execution, and especially if there's product market fit, you absolutely have to be getting out there. Because even the best products are not going to sell 100% of the time. So to give yourself a shot to hit your number, you have to be talking to multiple people, high volume of people in any given week, any given quarter.
How much is your quota at TwinGate versus your sales team? Like, is it 50%, 75%, 10%? Like, how have you personally dealt with that?
It takes a few months to ramp up on our product because it's quite technical. And unless you've sold this exact product, you ramp up for 2 to 3 months. So what that means is when I first hired my team, I hired my first seller last December, late December. 90% of the company's quota was my quota. Because I'm not going to expect the seller to sell for at least 2 to 3 months. And then now it's ramping down. Like last quarter, I would say, you know, 60% of my number, my personal number, was the team's number in terms of attainment. You know, this quarter, it's probably going to be somewhere
between 60% of your number. The team's number was yours, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, so you're personally selling more than half of TwinGate.
Revenue wise.
Wow.
Because your leader also has to try and bat up market, if that makes sense. So I'm always experimenting. If I feel like a 4,000 person company is big, can we sell a 7,000 person company? So your leader is still going to be whale hunting, right?
So you're the vanguard.
I try to be, yeah. And trying to essentially like explore the next frontier. And in that, you should be closing big deals. For our product, right? It might not be the same for all products, obviously. We're a very enterprise-focused, company-wide deployment type product.
How big is your sales team right now? Just for calibration, so if our folks are listening, this is really good data.
Yeah. So sales team right now is 3 people. I'd say we have 2.5 sellers because the third person also helps with operations, right? Getting like Salesforce going.
Or is it 4 total?
4 total. And then this quarter, I have a head of customer success starting, and then we'll likely hire 4 to 6 more people over the next 2 to 3 months.
Wow. So let's say you're at that steady state in like, so you said like 3 to 4 months, right? So like, say it's like 6 months from now. Mostly they're ramped up. Like, how much of that quota for that team of, you know, 6, 8?
Let's say 10 total.
10 total people will you end up carrying yourself?
You know, I hope like 10 to 20% max, right? Because I want to be able to enable my team to be able to close the big deals as well. And also, the other thing is I am obviously going to be testing the enterprise market, but I'm still at that point, I'm going to need help from a seller to do the negotiation, to do the execution. I'll be there for guidance, but I can't be the one actually doing the selling because that means I'm not scaling. My dream is to have my team sell 100% of deals while still getting like guidance from me, obviously.
And at what point do you think about that cutover happening where you can finally step back from the front lines and having your own quota?
I think about it in terms of the unknown nature of new markets that we're tapping. So for example, if in a year I have 20 people and there's this massive unknown market that we need to experiment with, you know, and somehow that ends up unblocking half of our revenue for the company, you know, that pendulum or like that barometer of how much percentage of revenue and am I closing versus the team might differ. Now,
because you're going after that new unknown. You're
exactly. That's what I think about. Usually, you know, for us, the opportunity, like literally any company could use something like TwinGate because everybody's trying to migrate off VPN with remote work. So there's always going to be markets that we need to explore. Who knows what the next big market could be, whether I have 20 people or 40 people. And to give you an example, there could be like a partnership that brings in half of our revenue that I don't know about today. So that's what I think about. But within at least the known markets, I hope that 100% of the revenue is closed by my team, you know, with the processes that we know work.
Wow, this is so helpful. So I'm just imagining, you know, if I'm putting myself in the shoes of the listeners here, and just to kind of recap, it seems like what you should be expecting from your sales leader is that they are doing a lot of individual selling until they've figured out something that can be systematized.
Yes, that's such a great way to put it. Yeah.
Once it's systematized, they should be scaling a team to go after that that's of the right size for that market. And then they should be going hunting in the next field and figuring out what the game there looks like. I'm a vegetarian, so I hate these hunting analogies, but you know, figure out what field to plant, maybe crops, and then figure out again like what that opportunity looks like. And keep doing that is what it sounds like. This is not one of those like build it and then relax. It's build it and then keep moving.
Yeah, keep moving. And then for the processes that you know work, find managers to handle that. Like right now, I'm trying to figure out, Tony, my CEO, was like, hey, what's your org chart look like for next year? Which is a great question. Because we know there's a process that's working right now. So then I need to put in the right people and leaders to make sure that process continues going. You know, because the answer to the sales process working isn't, let me just hire a bunch more AEs and hope that it continues to work. It's like, what is the structure to ensure that 100 AEs can continue this engine? And you can only do that with great leadership. You can't do that by trying to manage 100 salespeople individually.
So I think this was a really helpful, concrete example of what good looks like. You mentioned earlier that there were a few other signs that a sales leader was not working out that you would be looking for. Let's go through those.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other signs are if there's not collaborative, proactive suggestions of things that are outside of what you are suggesting. So, you know, I talk with a lot of CEOs and sometimes I ask, hey, it seems like you're trying to put goals in place, but is your sales leader also suggesting what goals to put in place as well? For example, if the pricing hasn't been figured out or, you know, like maybe you don't actually know what the revenue number should be, the sales leader should be saying, hey, based off of my experience, based off of what I'm seeing at your company, here's what I would suggest. Here's what's reasonable. And that's why you hire a sales leader. You don't hire a sales leader to put goals on that sales leader. You hire a sales leader to take inputs from that sales leader and to collaboratively put a goal in place. A lot of times, unfortunately, sales leaders don't do that. The best sales leaders are able to suggest not only process, but also metrics and the goalposts as well, without making excuses for ourselves. And so I think that's also something I've seen where sometimes I ask CEOs, hey, what has your sales leader actually suggested? And they're like, actually not much, you know, or the suggestions are like, hey, I'm going to reach out to 40 more people. I mentioned volume as being important, but sometimes you need to take a step back even from that. You know, if you've already reached out to 1,000 people and you're not getting responses, the answer isn't to say I'm going to reach out to 2,000 people. The answer is I'm going to take a look at messaging and here's what's not working. But surprisingly, I've heard from CEOs sometimes that the answer is, yep, I've got a handle on this. I'm just going to increase volume and we'll be fine. And so I think that's also the other thing you should look for is like, is your revenue leader pointing out problems that you already know exist and then also other problems that you might not know exist? And oftentimes that doesn't happen. I'll tell you one thing too, like I'm an optimist, I'm super optimistic, but when things aren't going well, I'm also very upfront about the fact that they're not going well. If you don't have somebody who's willing to call out that elephant in the room early, probably not the right person for the job. In pain and in rocky roads is where you're going to find, I think, your best sales leader or your best revenue leader. Like they're going to be able to go through that with you, rather than somebody who's like, oh, everything's fine, we'll figure it out type of thing.
Peter, what you're saying makes me kind of want to summarize it is it seems like you want somebody who's both a seller who's willing to go and get out after it, but also someone who's a problem solver and going to really be thinking through. So not just somebody who's executing the plan, but who's puts the plan in place and surfaces that back, like 360, taking ownership of the situation. It seems to me, I'm wondering if this resonates, but like I'm kind of imagining that if somebody needs to come to you and ask the question, is my sales leader the right sales leader? That is a really strong sign that the answer is no. Because if they were the right sales leader, they would have been upfront with the person coming to you, that sales leader would have been upfront with them.
Yep.
And would be making some proactive suggestions. It seems like once they are coming to you, they're not getting that. And that in and of itself is a red flag in your mind.
Yeah, if there's no proactive, like, hey, here's what I'm doing, there's no iteration of the strategy, I think that's probably not the right person. Because every day, I'm sure founders are resonating with this, every hour, actually, you have a different set of problems, a new curveball that's thrown your way where you need to adjust. So I think you're probably looking for that in your sales leader too. Like your sales leader can't have a plan that doesn't change over even like 2 weeks. There's optimization constantly that needs to happen. And unfortunately, a lot of go-to-market leaders will just go away and try and figure it out without realizing that figuring it out means that you're constantly collaborating with your boss, the CEO or the founder.
This is super, I think, super interesting and helpful for anyone who's trying to figure out which throat to choke or yeah, whether a throat needs to be choked. I want to dive a little bit into more of the meat of things for a minute and take it maybe from the perspective of the sales leader who is being proactive, who is going out and struggling in a market. When those kind of folks come to you and they're saying, you know, I've been working with my CEO, we're trying these things out, you know, I've been out in the field, I'm hearing this, it's still not working. What's your advice then?
If you feel like there could be something there that's promising, time box when you need to see the results by. Right? Give yourself a quarter or 2 quarters, depending on what the sales cycle looks like in your field, in your platform. And then be very confident that if that mark is met, that you're going to stick with it. But if it's not met, you're going to leave. That's what I would say, because it's not worth anybody's time being miserable for more than a couple quarters trying to figure out a problem. You know, I'm a huge believer in you shouldn't need to bang your head against the wall to make something work. There's enough problems out there. There's enough teams out there where you will find success in the first couple quarters that could use your energy. So that's what I would say is figure out what is it. Maybe it's not even revenue at that point. Do you need to see a certain number of signups? Then just do that because, you know, the signups will eventually lead to revenue. Is it number of logos? Figure out that goalpost and stick to it.
I like that. So you're... Is that actually generally good life advice? If there are a lot of don't take the hard shots, take the easy shots, find the easy shots.
Yeah, and because even the easy shots have hard elements to it that you're gonna need to figure out, right? So
yeah, and it turns out all the shots are, well, I mean, not to push it too far, but in basketball, the shots are either worth 2 or 3 points. You're not getting extra. You're not getting bonus points.
I think also just be honest with yourself about whether or not you're the right person. You know, like I'm not a great sales or revenue leader for every company. Actually, I'm probably not for most companies. Let's be honest, right? Why is that? Because there's a ton of variables. There's the relationship with my CEO. There's the market dynamics. There's the product. There's what I'm good at. I love relationship building and I'm a deals guy. I love deal psychology, which is why we talk about it a lot. But some revenue leaders need to be able to sit behind a spreadsheet and pull levers that are scalable levers to pull to be able to unblock revenue channels. Talking to people and building relationships might not be the thing that gets a company to really be successful. So that's what I would say for revenue leaders too, is be really honest about your skill sets and talk about that with your CEO and founder. And be honest about, again, the elephant in the room, you know, because sometimes it's not the process, it's you. And I'm totally comfortable admitting that because I know what I love and I know what my gaps are.
I think that's going to be a wrap for today. For our audience, you know, I think some of the key takeaways are, one, the answer when the sales process isn't working is you got to get into the muck. You as the leader of the organization, if you're the CEO, the founder, or if you're on the sales side, you both got to be in the field talking to customers and debugging together, thinking about, is it the right market? You know, are you selling to the right kinds of companies, to the right size of companies, to the right buyers and personas? And then really looking at this, not just as a sales problem, but as a product problem and an overall company problem. And if you're that founder and your sales leader isn't getting into things, and we just talked about how Peter Spin, you know, has more quota than his entire team, you should be expecting activity and action from them rather than submitting spreadsheets and vision plans.